It's a magazine you don't have to feel obligated to buy from your nephew's fundraiser. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live, free on your radio. Now. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Roger Lajoie in for Ben Ennis today. John Gregg, Donovan Bennett in the house, and glad you're with us here on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 590 The Fan here in our Toronto studios. Lots to talk about on this beautiful December morning. We'll get to it all. TFC, Grey Cup, Raptors, Tiger, baseball rumors. Well, let's talk Leafs off the top, gentlemen, and we'll talk about this Leaf team. And this Leaf team, although 10-9-4, whatever the record is, John, is not that great a record, in my mind, is doing everything real fine. Thank you very much. I'm liking everything I'm seeing with them.
Yeah, I mean, when people are up in arms about the fourth line and the fifth and sixth defensemen, and that's they seem to be the storylines and the roster discussions, then you know you're doing something pretty well. And there's no doubt it's been an exciting team to watch for the first time in, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years. And, you know, the ratings are showing it and the scoring leaders are showing it. And, you know, people are finally, again, happy to be Leafs fans.
Are the Leafs fun, Donovan, to you, your mind?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of goals. They're going both ways and they come often late, but they're fun to watch. And as a sports fan, when you're trying to lose yourself in something else, when you're watching after a hard day, you at least want some hope, right? Like the Raptors are very good, very consistent, but a lot of fans don't really have any hope that they're going to beat the Cavs.
Yep.
So in many ways, even though they're better than the Leafs, they're less interesting. The Leafs are interesting because there is that hope. What might they be in 2, 3, 4 years? What might they be by the end of this year? So that's the interesting thing. And they're also interesting because as good as they are, you just want to leave them alone. Like people are talking about, oh, we need a fourth defenseman to shore up our defensive issues. Yeah, but maybe you get him and you lose him in the expansion draft. Like, you just want to let everything kind of simmer and cook and then make your moves, you know, when you know really what you have and the pieces that you have.
Yeah. Well, and the hope comes from the youth, which is the thing. If this team was just good because they signed a 30-year-old free agent who's having a career a year and, wow, fantastic, they're moving up. It's their best players outside of JVR, Kadri, and Kadri's still pretty young, are really young guys, like young as in 19, 20, 21.
Yeah, I mean, they're dressing 6, 7 rookies a night right now. And as you said, Raj, those guys are the ones who are driving the bus here for this team. I mean, obviously, Kadri has embraced a newish role for him this year, although he is scoring again. But, you know, the rest of them, the Nylanders, Matthews, Marners, all those guys, Soshnikov, everybody, they are the guys people are tuning in to watch. And it's been a hell of a long time since anybody tuned in to watch Maple Leafs rookies. That's for sure.
Marner, Matthews, the great young talent, Nylander, Riley is all great. That's easy. That's the core moving forward. That's easy. You got other guys. Now there's some questions. And we already talked about Kadri. I mentioned JVR. We talked about some of the veteran players. I'm of the mindset now, all right, do nothing, like you said, stay the course or whatever. But trade deadline comes, and we know what it is. And let's say this Leaf team moves back. The obvious kind of targets is, okay, what about JVR? He's a low-priced guy. Teams in the NHL now would look at a player like him. He's having a great year. He's got 19 points in 23 games. He's bought in. Kadri is terrific. Would you guys be in any kind of a hurry to make those moves at trade deadline to get even younger? Or at some point, don't you at least have to have a couple of JVRs and Kadri in your lineup? And if you already have them, why trade them?
You'd have to knock my socks off for me to trade JVR or Kadri right now. To me, those guys, I mean, you know, JVR is 27, and he's like one of the old guys on this team, and he's proven he can be a 30-goal scorer. He's a big-bodied winger. He's the kind of guy that you need when you have all these younger guys who are not yet physically mature flying around the ice, playing east-west hockey. He's more of a north-south guy, and you still need depth on your roster, and you know, and he's top-end depth for you. So, no, I wouldn't move him unless I don't know what a contending team who needs a scoring winger could offer you outside of, you know, really good prospects that would be of interest.
Does Dougie Hamilton knock your socks off?
No. I mean, do you want big-bodied defensemen who can skate fast and move the puck? Yes, for sure. I don't think, though, that the Flames would want Like, they're going to want a Dougie Hamilton type in return for Dougie Hamilton. They spent a lot of money and capital on him to get him in the first place. And I can't see them moving him for, you know, a forward. They've got guys who can score. They might not be scoring right now, but they're built on defense, kind of from the goalie out, although the goalie situation there is a little bit
weird,
tenuous at right now. I mean, Chad Johnson is playing well. Brian Elliott is not playing well. And, you know, thank God you got Chad Johnson. But, yeah, I'm not super impressed with Dougie Hamilton. Mostly, though, if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, I think you just want to stand pat and let's see what plays out and how things go and how players develop.
Well, I agree. But on the other hand, you know, it's at some point how things develop. And you mentioned 27 years old. In today's NHL, 27's old. I mean, we know what JVR is and what he isn't. And I like him. He's a player. He's a piece. But wait to see what develops. Yeah, we want to see how the kids develop. I think I've seen enough of JVR and Kadri to know how I feel about them. I like them, but I'd listen. And would you have to blow my sock? Of course you want to win every deal. You want a great deal. But if the phone call comes in to me, I'm not so much taking the attitude, you're going to have to blow my socks off. I'm listening. Because I look at guys, you know, and especially Kadri. I look at him. You look at a veteran guy. And in the salary cap era of the NHL, with the salary you're paying a guy like that, he's got to be one of your top six and play on that first or second line on a consistent basis. And Kadri has bought in. He's been terrific. He's a veteran player. But I think that's replaceable, expendable in different ways to do other needs. And he's the kind of guy who would be very attractive to other teams.
I just don't know who would do the job that Kadri is doing right now for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
I'm not worried about right now, though. What I'm talking about, John, is like 2 years down. I hear you. Yes, he is a value now, but I would seriously listen to any deal. Like, how active? Do they have to blow your socks off to make a deal, or if you're the GM?
Yeah, that's why I think it would be more interested and more realistic maybe to move JVR than Kadri, because I think the return is much greater. I think the opportunity cost is better there, and that's why, you know, you look at a guy like Dougie Hamilton, because maybe if you paired with Babcock, you know, he profiles as a guy who maybe would continue to improve, where he's not as valued in Calgary because he, you know, truculence is not the first word when you think Dougie Hamilton. And there's obviously a relationship between Burke and JVR. But having said that, I like guys who are low maintenance, who are good in the room. And I'm talking about now JVR, not necessarily Kadri, who are, you know, proven, consistent. Those are the guys you're looking to acquire. So when you have one, I'm not in a rush to move them.
Well, I'm not in a rush either, but I'll tell you what, I would think that there might be a good fit there, but we'll see. Are they anything close to a playoff team? Is this discussion kind of irrelevant? Because they're going to be close enough to the playoffs that if you're 1 point out of the playoffs at trade deadline, and if you're all about the rebuild, how big a deal is that? So they're 1 point at the trade deadline, and I'm knocking your socks off. I want JVR and Kadri or something, one of the veteran players where you're going to take a step back. You're prepared to do that? How much of a mantra do you guys think it is that winning is part of development?
I think it's huge. And you know, in the past, I've always said, you know, you're better off tanking than you are finishing in the mushy middle. And I think that is still the case. But once the Leafs have been tanking for years now, they are filled with top 10 picks. You got it. These kids have to learn how to win at some point. They have to learn what it's like, what the pressure cooker of a playoff race and possibly the playoffs can be. And you can't just keep sacrificing the present for the future and taking steps back mid-season and expect your young kids to get better and to learn how to grind through an NHL campaign. It's just, I think that if you have a chance, you go for it. And then you never know what happens when you get into the playoffs. I'm not suggesting that they're a cup contender, but a hot goalie and some good luck at a good coach, you could win a round.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, because there's a fine line between becoming the Oilers and just having picks that never really, you know, reach their potential, and being the Hawks and getting a couple of those good picks, and then you build your team from that framework. I'm really don't think, if I'm Lou Lamoriello or Brendan Shannon, I'm that interested in making the playoffs. Because even if you don't have that pick and add it to an already extremely young and good core, both, you know, on the top team, but in the Marley system, I just don't know if you don't want that asset. because if we're not moving people from the roster to get better, you know, a pick helps, right? So the other thing is I have no confidence that this goalie is the goalie who's going to get hot and win you around. So I would
you don't like Freddie Anderson?
Not that much.
Really? No. Yeah. I kind of like him. That's another one. Is that Jonathan Bernier, or is he going to be, you know, a goaltender who really can take you to the next level?
I will say that Freddie Anderson looks like he can better handle the criticism and the pressure cooker of Toronto than Jonathan Bernier.
Agreed.
Can. You know, he was crumbling, you know, I don't want to say emotionally, but, you know, between the ears in this city, whereas Freddie Anderson had weathered a horrendous October, and his November numbers are pretty good, and he's getting back up to where the Leafs would have expected him to be. So I don't think he's Jonathan Bernier.
NHL general manager told me once, guys, on the topic of winning is development. He said, you know, Raj, when you're looking, trying to decide your core players, are these guys, you know, going to be your core players? How do you judge it on and taking the next step? And he said, the only way you can really tell is if they perform at the biggest time in a playoff hunt or in the playoffs. But if you go to the playoffs and the hunt too early, then you don't get that extra number one, two, or three, and then the cycle never changes. But you really can't see how great these guys are going to be until they get in the playoffs. It's the classic catch-22. So I go back, the Leafs are a point out of a playoff, or a point in the playoff spot. And the call comes, and maybe your socks are starting to slip off, and they're coming off your feet, and you realize, yeah, but wait a minute. We make the playoffs, and you just described it. Maybe you get a victory. At some point, you got to make the call. How important is it to win something now to develop?
Here's the thing, is what would knock my socks off for a guy like Kadri or JVR is like a top 10 pick and a top prospect. And the teams that are going to come calling for those players don't have those things because they are good teams looking to win now. So you're looking at the 25th pick overall, and you're looking at, you know, maybe a B or a B-plus prospect, but not the A guy that you want to add to your system. So, you know, if somebody comes calling in December instead of in February, then maybe you look at it because that's a team that's looking to add depth and relatively young depth to its current roster. And they might have a top 10 pick or something. But the contenders don't have those assets to move. So, you know, unless you're trying to dump salary, which you don't need to with either of those guys, I just don't necessarily see the point. And I will say this too. Although the executives might look at it and say, we don't need to win right now, it's not necessarily too important to us, I can tell you Mike Babcock wants to win. Like, he's not coaching a team to not make the playoffs, that's for sure.
Well, he thinks it's part of the development. That was my point about other people. He's one of those guys that think that is part of the process. Development is winning. You cannot, and that's what took the Oilers so long. They had 6-7 years with great young talent that never went anywhere because they did not have the surrounding veterans like a JVR or a Kadri to help them develop quicker. They never won, and the development stalled as a result with some of those guys. And eventually, what do you have to do? Trade Taylor Hall, because you got to do something to get that defenseman.
I would argue you didn't have to trade
Hall. You didn't. Okay. But you know, they felt this was the direction to go. So that's where the winning comes in. Currently, they dress a number 1, 4, 7, and 8 overall in their lineup, as you brought up.
How many do you want? What does it take before it's time to like look towards the future and some winning?
So is the future now, or is it another year or two? And if they slip back and they get another number 3, now you got 5 guys who are top 8 overall players in the NHL, and recently, not 1999, recently.
That sounds like a great problem to have. Like, I just think that from my Babcock standpoint, he's a guy who has won. He's not worried about his legacy. He's got tenure in his contract. He's clearly not going anywhere. And I agree. I think he does want to win, but I think he's focused on winning at the high end and winning cups and multiple cups. And so kind of getting in the playoffs and being a frisky team and messing around, I don't think that's going to necessarily move him. And I think he as well, even though in the moment is trying to win every game, would also take a long view. It wouldn't be a situation where ownership is thinking one thing and the coach, you know, is fighting for every last win. It's thinking something totally different. So, again, I'm not going to learn anything about Austin Matthews in a 6-game playoff series that I don't already know about him. Like, I know I've seen him play internationally, seen him play, you know, in the World Cup of Hockey. I know that in big moments he steps up. So for me, I'd love to have, you know, another top talented player, and whether he's ever on this team or not, it's a great asset to have.
Yeah, you know what? It's hard to argue with that logic, Don. That's why I guess I'm suggesting the same kind of thing as if you sit back another year, three, four, five years in a row, you don't make the playoffs. Maybe I got an issue. I can wait one more year for another top two or three overall pick. I'm delighted. But then at some point I'm saying you can't do this Oilers thing 4 or 5 years. Let's keep rebuilding. But I will give it this year. I agree with you there. This year, I'm not worried about the playoffs.
I think Mike Babcock would know this game better than any. If you look at his early tenure in Detroit when they were, you know, constantly at the top of the standings, or, you know, by the time he was leaving Detroit, and they were fighting to be the 8th, 7th, you know, around 9th seed every year. It's tough. Once you're in that purgatory in the middle, it's tough to get out of it because you don't have the pick capital, and obviously your players on your roster aren't that great.
Yeah, and I would also say that they're not going to have the 3rd overall pick this year unless something happens in the lottery that shouldn't happen.
Right.
Because they're not going to finish that low. There are teams in the NHL that are brutal right now, and the Leafs really aren't one of them. You know, are they a 500 team? Well, depends what you think of records, and, you know, they're 10-9-4 or something like that. So in my books, they're under 500, but they're not the Vancouver Canucks or the Arizona Coyotes, or at this point, even the New York Islanders. They are going to be maybe in the bottom 10, or they could be in the playoffs.
Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Roger Lejoie for Ben Ennis, John Grigg, Donovan Bennett with us, and glad you're with us as well on the Fan Radio Network. Special hi to the folks in Calgary listening in this morning as well. Let's stay on that for a second, though. The Leafs are 3 points out of a wild card spot with 2 games in hand in the Eastern Conference. They are also 2 points out of dead last in the Eastern Conference. I know it's early. I know, but I mean, the parity in the NHL is ridiculous, and the fine line between what you just said, and I agree, John, I like them. I look at them, there's no way they're not going to get bottom five team in the NHL. I don't know. Maybe they still can be a bottom line team, especially if they deal one of the veteran players. The Islanders are 2 points back of them. Buffalo is a point back of them. Carolina is a point back of them. And I think Carolina is a better team than the record showing. So in other words, like, I don't know, maybe they do slip back. You're right. Arizona, Vancouver appear to be really bad, but I'm not prepared to say the Leafs couldn't finish 3rd last.
I think the Leafs, though, are improving. Like, I think that you could expect better results from that team
as the
season goes on. I mean, and the reason that it's so tight right now is because we're like 22, 23 games into a season that offers 3 points for many games.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds of points being handed out, and it's hard to get the separation, which is exactly what the NHL wanted when they instituted this system. They want playoff races to come down to the end. And we've seen ever since the lockout in 2004-05 that that's exactly what's happened, that, you know, it's down to the last week every single year, and that builds excitement, and it means that your team theoretically is in it later into the year.
It's interesting because that makes the races exciting, specifically with the wild card, but it also makes trade deadline terrible, and the last couple haven't been great because who is a buyer and who is a seller, and really what is good value and good price? It's tough to figure out, and so that's one of the, I guess, unintended consequences of the 3-point games, is that people are picking up points left, right, and center, and you don't really get that separation.
Leafs play Canucks tonight in Vancouver after the last nasty game here in Toronto. Should we expect everything to happen, or because of the last nasty game in Toronto, we should expect nothing to happen because everybody will be watching? What do you think?
Well, I don't think the players care about everybody watching or nobody watching.
Well, I mean the league office.
No, but even still, I don't think they care. I think, you know, it happens in the moment. I don't think that the Canucks or the Leafs are going out there with a game plan to go and do anything nasty. I just think that gameplay happens and you get heated up and you just kind of go with the flow. So would I expect to see fireworks tonight? Honestly, Raj, I don't know, because I don't know how intense this game is going to be.
Yeah, I don't expect to see 171 penalty minutes, a spear, a death threat. Like, I don't think we're going to see that. I don't think this is, you know, Avalanche Canucks, you know, round two.
It did come out of the blue. It did come out of the, let's face it, the Leafs and the Canucks were not traditional rivals. This isn't like a team that's been brewing for years. It was one really nasty, ugly game with a lot of talk and afterwards. And we don't see it so much in the NHL, but it's relatively not that long ago. You know, it's not like it's been a year since they played. That game was only 23 games into the season, and they're already seeing each other a second time. I think I expect at least one or two sparks tonight.
It's, I think it really has nothing to do with the Leafs. And you mentioned they're not fast rivals, but over the years, how many shots and hits have the Sedin twins taken without real retribution, where I feel like it was almost like the straw that broke the camel's back and it became out of control really quickly? That's why I don't know. These are teams who won't see each other often. There isn't that built-in, hate and detest for the other. So I don't necessarily expect another all-out brawl where, you know, Ryan Miller is trying to get into a fight.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, the hatred is, like, between the fan bases more than anything. Yes. And it's really kind of a one-way street.
Even the stands will be the place to be then.
Like, it's just, you know, one city doesn't like the other city. And, you know, and that's where the animosity is built up in the media as much. I can't see two teams, one of them who is a definite bottom feeder and the other one who's trying to get better every game, going into, you know, a Saturday night and thinking, we got to go out and get those guys.
So here's the problem with the Canucks. They thought they were going to be a lot better. That's the worst situation.
They're the only ones, though.
Exactly, they did. You're absolutely right. They're the only ones. That's why they bring in a Burrows. That's why they have the Sedin still. That's why they're in that situation. They are. They're the Leafs of a couple of years ago, just trying to find a way. And now, you know, people say, you know, tanking. Vancouver Canucks aren't tanking. The Vancouver Canucks stink, and they're losing a lot of games. They're not tanking. They're trying to win, and that makes it even worse when you're at the bottom. The worst thing, everyone says the worst thing is to be 8th or 9th or 10th in the conference. The worst thing is to be at the bottom of the standings trying to win, and that's the situation they're in. So I think their situation is really bad. But is it a good thing or a bad thing that there's only a handful of crappy teams in the NHL? And who are the superstar teams in the NHL? I mean, Washington, based on last year, Montreal's got the most points. Chicago's always tough, but really, there's full parity in the NHL. 10 teams could win the cup, and maybe a handful of teams are really, really bad, and everybody else is eh. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think the NHL now is turning into a league not unlike the NBA, where you're tuning in to watch individuals. Now, the league itself does a really poor job of marketing the individuals, but, you know, I'm on Game Center Live making sure that I'm catching Oilers games so I can watch Connor McDavid. I want to see how many goals Sidney Crosby can score in a 20-game span. You know, I'm tuning in to watch Austin Matthews. I'm not necessarily tuning in to watch the Pittsburgh Penguins. And so I think it's a league where there are a number of contending teams, and again, it's still too early to figure out how things are going to shake out in both conferences, but I think there's a lot of exciting individuals to tune in to watch.
What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, if you look, and really, the game is always going to be healthy and well-followed in this country. The real question for the league office is, what do you do to make that case, you know, south of the border? When we look at the two models in the States, there's the NFL, where people cheer for the logo, right? I mean, they're fantasy and betting options as well. But ultimately, you're a fan of the Packers, no matter if it's Brett Favre or Aaron Rodgers as your quarterback. And then there's the NBA, where you're a fan of LeBron James, whether or not he's on the Cavs or the Heat, or Kevin Durant, whether he's on the Thunder or the Warriors.
But there's no parity in the NBA. There's a couple of teams that can win the title and everybody else.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You're following those transitional stars, and that's where the championships go.
But can you do that in hockey in a team game? Like, is that going to be enough? Like, okay, Connor McDavid will keep my interest all year because the Edmonton Oilers, and who are in the playoffs one day and out of the playoffs the next day. That's what I mean by the standings. It changes every day.
But I think the Oilers fans think they can win a cup because they have Connor McDavid. Right, I think the Pittsburgh Penguins knew that they were going to have a run of a lot of opportunities to win a cup because they had Sidney Crosby, and the Capitals obviously they haven't cashed in yet, but they're in that conversation because of Ovechkin. And so, as you know, we build those stars across the league. You know, I think that helps because, yeah, you're right. I'm going to be interested in the Tampa Bay Lightning not because of their history or their logo, but because Steven Stamkos is, you know, one of the best players in the world. So I think the league is needs to use its stars to build its fan bases, not the other way
instead
around.
Of the teams and the races. I think that's fair enough.
You know what else, too, about that is the league doesn't do a good job of marketing the individual stars, but there are so many homer broadcasts across the NHL where, you know, if you're in Philly and Pittsburgh comes in and Sidney Crosby scores a goal, it's like, oh, yep, Crosby scored a goal, instead of talking about how awesome Sidney Crosby is, how dominant he can be. You know, the hometown announcers need to be tasked with selling the stars and teams around the league more than just in some cases, specifically cheering for their own team.
Yeah, well, they're employees of the team. That's what makes it complicated. But I hear you on
that. But the teams can be
It's hard to find a
directed.
Good clip of a Crosby Road goal. You're right about that. We try to do that at night.
But if you're an American hockey fan, the vast majority of games that you watch are local broadcasts. You're not watching, I mean, the numbers tell us, you're not watching a lot of national broadcasts, whether it was on Versus before or on NBC, you're not. So in the NBA, well, in the NFL, everything feels like a national broadcast, but in the NBA, you can, if you're you're watching ESPN, 3-4 national broadcasts a week, plus TNT. The interesting thing, though, is I wonder how much of it is breaking down the traditional hockey culture, where everything is collective, everything is team first. Everyone walks in same way, trench coat, beanie, toque, Starbucks cup. Like, it's everything is about not being bigger than the team. It's putting team first. Even in the answers that guys give, it's all, you know, we got pucks in deep. Where the NBA, it's you can't help but talk about the individual because they're putting themselves at the forefront. And culturally, that's the way it's been because you're looking for your scholarship. And
it's a very different
your
game.
Family.
Well, in the roster size, there's a 10-man roster in the NBA and there's 20 guys in the NHL. And you're right. It's all about the team in the NHL and the team concept.
And the impact that one player can have on the direction and ability of a team to win. I mean, you do see, okay, yes, Connor McDavid is leading the league in scoring as a sophomore and by all accounts cannot be stopped, more or less. But, you know, when
still not enough to put the team a dominant position.
Exactly. Whereas LeBron can go from one team to the next and that team becomes an immediate contender.
We'll get to the TFC and Grey Cup in a second, but quickly, guys, if you had one player in the NHL, okay, to win tonight's game, is Connor McDavid already there ahead of Crosby or Ovechkin? Somebody asked me that the other day and I went, holy smokes, is that a tough call? For the future, yeah. If I'm drafting a team for the future, it's McDavid. But I need to win tonight. Holy smokes, he's that good. I might take him over Crosby already.
I would still take Crosby because of his physical maturity and ability to play harder down low and kind of grind things out when you need to grind them out. But nobody in the world can do the things that Connor McDavid can do at top speed. I mean, it's just amazing to watch him work every night.
You got one guy for tonight, Donovan.
That's tough. And the fact that it's even a conversation is remarkable given the kid's age. But yeah, his McDavid's, you know, size to skill ratio is off the charts. But for one winning one game and you're trying to play a two-way game, I think it's still Crosby.
And it might be Carey Price.
Well, yeah. There
oh, not really complicated.
That's a great,
yeah,
that's
you
a
brought
great
the
point.
Goaltender in, especially with the importance of goaltending. That's so true. John Gregg, Donovan Bennett, Roger Lajoie in for Ben Ennis, Sportsnet Magazine Live coming up. City of Toronto had two big events, the Grey Cup Sunday and TFC in Montreal on Wednesday. Which one did more for the respective league? We'll discuss that next right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Fans know that Sportsnet.ca has them covered with news, analysis, highlights, and storytelling. But the lineup also includes podcasts. It's a sea of red. This is TFC Pitchside with Dan Riccio and Thomas Michalakos.
Joining us now on TFC Pitchside, Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos. It is Stu Callan of the Montreal Gazette.
Montreal isn't good enough at making their own jokes about the big O, but we definitely get Toronto's ammunition.
The refs were late because of the Montreal laws, the road laws about not making right-hand turns on red lights. I mean, that's absolutely ridiculous. You're just causing more traffic. Aside from that, what did you take about Greg Vanney's comments about the field and everything that was going on?
Well, I wonder what he would have been saying if they hadn't scored those two late goals. And, you know, I mentioned a column the other day. He talked about how Sebastian Giovinco found it dangerous. But, you know, he scored as many goals on the big old surface as he did on the grass at Caputo Stadium in the playoff game last year, which was zero.
Jeff Carlisle joining us now, ESPN writer.
Now, would there be a lot more for the league to hype if Toronto was in it? Absolutely. You know, I think that would still be the case. I mean, especially because you've got some pretty well-known U.S. internationals in Jozy Altidore and Michael Bradley. And then you've got just an amazing talent in Sebastian Giovinco. So the league would have some better stories to tell for sure.
He has blown the whistle. TFC, 5-2 winners, 7-5 over the Montreal Impact on aggregates. Toronto FC now going to MLS Cup Final. They will host the Seattle Sounders right here at BMO Field Saturday, December 10th. The date with destiny is set.
Go to sportsnet.ca and click on the Podcast Central logo for the scoop on all our shows, as well as links to listen and subscribe. Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcast. catcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
We chased the colors melting. We never felt so strange.
Sports Magazine Live. I'm Roger Lajoie, in for Ben Ennis this week. Great to be here. John Greig, Donovan Bennett in the house on the Sportsnet Radio Network and, of course, Sportsnet 590 Fan here in Toronto. Later in the show, we'll talk about the Raptors, who face a showdown battle, get this, Cleveland, for first in the Eastern Conference. Perhaps could be a game. It could be tied by then. Heading into Monday's game as they continue to win games. We'll talk about the return of Tiger Woods and much more. Always great to have you with us. TFC Grey Cup was a busy sports week in Toronto, guys, for both events. Grey Cup Sunday, Wednesday, MLS Eastern Conference Final for the first time here in Toronto, and TFC moving on. Let's start with the Grey Cup. The Grey Cup, again, has great TV numbers, was a great property throughout the country. But throughout the week, the bigger story most of the time, John, was that nobody was paying attention and how easy it was to order a pizza and get Grey Cup tickets.
Yeah, I would say that was the bigger story here in this city. I would suggest that in Calgary and in other CFL markets around the country, there was excitement for this game. And, you know, the Grey Cup, for whatever it is in Toronto, is still kind of a national holiday where, you know, people from around this country watch the Grey Cup like similar to the way the Super Bowl is watched. And there is excitement. There's still love for the league and the sport. There just isn't much in Toronto.
Yeah, and it's too bad. And some of the attention from other markets is almost bewilderment and frustration on how much it doesn't translate in Toronto. Like, do you not understand kind of what you have? And it just feeds into the notion by many in our country that Torontonians think they're better and different than the rest of the country.
Well, agreed. And here's the thing, though, and 100%. Then why play it in Toronto?
You know what?
And two times in 4 years, the Grey Cup was at the Rogers, and I know why.
Well, and
the
it's
new
back.
Owners, it's BMO, and it's coming back again. It's like, come on, play the game in Regina, Ottawa, Montreal. Vancouver's got the same kind of problems. Winnipeg, I'm saying you have enough, even in a nine-team league, you got enough franchise where they can have the Grey Cup every 5 or 6 years, and the big topic wouldn't be throwing tickets around. It disgraces the game and the CFL. I don't get this preoccupation. We got to make it work in Toronto. Well, if we don't like it here, we don't like it here. Move on. Let the great folks at Calgary have another cup.
I would say that those in the league office would suggest that the league is healthiest when Toronto is a market that matters, and you have to do everything you can to make Torontonians care about the CFL. It's just too big of a media market to make it secondary in your thoughts. And you know what? I put a lot of this on the Argos. I mean, the team sucks. It usually sucks. I don't know of any kind of grassroots football that goes on in this city that is sponsored by the Argonauts. I don't see them trying to be a big player in sports in this city. They are an afterthought because they're not out there really doing much to put themselves at the forefront of people's minds.
I was at the Grey Cup Sunday. I was at the Grey Cup at the Rogers Centre a couple of years ago. Go back to the Rogers Centre a couple of years ago, Donovan. Argos are the home team. It was an exciting game. They had Justin Bieber and Gordon Lightfoot playing the halftime. I never really got my head around that. That's quite a combination. But at any rate, I digress. The game was great. It was exciting. The Argos won the game. People went out in the streets and celebrated after. They were going to honk into the horns. You could not have asked for a better script. You could not have. The home team wins the Grey Cup hosting. Fantastic. Played their way in. Not as a host, as we all know in the CFL. Played their way in. Great. Fantastic. The next year, nothing. So what makes you think that anything is going to change by bringing the Grey Cup this year and again in another couple of years? You can only beat it. Well, you can beat a dead horse as long as you want, but the horse is dead.
Well, one, I think they thought the move to BMO would jumpstart things. And although it helped in season tickets, it didn't help in overall tickets to the degree that they'd hope. Two, I think bringing the Grey Cup here, I think it has something to do with the Argos, but I think a lot of it has to do with the league. The league sponsors all of their nationwide sponsors have offices here in Toronto. So if you want to wine and dine your friends from whether it's Kia or Tim Hortons, they're all here. They're all on Bay Street. So as relevant as the franchises are across the country, I'm not taking out the VP of Rona in Saskatchewan. I'm not doing it, right? So realistically, having a celebration in Southern Ontario for business reasons alone makes sense. And again, we're saying there's troubles here in Toronto. If we're being realistic, there's with the way, you know, our industry is going, media resources are slim to none. How many reporters are you, if you are the Globe and Mail or the National Post or frankly Sportsnet, how many are you sending if the game's in Winnipeg relative to how many you're sending if it's down the street in Toronto?
Okay.
So the league gets more coverage when it's here, even if it's not a big deal in this city.
Okay, I can see that, and I do understand, but if the core point, and you're okay, so schmoozing with the corporate people, all right, I get it. But you don't bring the Grey Cup into a city three times in 7 years just to schmooze corporately, and what are the corporate people like? They like interest. They like people responding to their ads. They like positive vibe. They like a great event. How do you think a corporate guy goes when people are tweeting in the middle of the week about pizza deals and free Grey Cup tickets, and you're investing your corp? You know what corporate they like more, just as much as schmoozing? They like a return on their investment and not an embarrassment. I think it's, I love the CFL. I think the game is great. I think it deserves better than Toronto. And this we got to do it to please it. Okay, all right, you know what then, Donovan? Once every 10 years then, okay. But this kind of, and they really, I believe they think it's going to grow the game. How many people will be at the Argos' second home game next year as a result of this Grey Cup being in Toronto?
Well, the issue, there wasn't enough people at the first home game.
Exactly.
That was the issue.
Never mind the second.
But actually, I mean, the pizza thing, part of that was, you know, a mistake by one of those corporate partners. It wasn't the league who did that. Pizza had an allotment of tickets, and they decided that to have
that's
that
how they were going to use them.
And yeah, the league said, well, no, you can't do that. But the other thing is, any of those corporate partners who were there on the weekend had a great time, saw a full stadium, and they see good TV numbers throughout the year. They don't care what the Argos season ticket base is. If I'm a national sponsor, I could care less. The in-game product looked good. It was presented well, and the TV product has been pretty good. So if the Argos aren't winning, to me, that doesn't really matter. And actually, the Argos struggle because the franchise is fighting against the league in the same market for sponsorship, for attention. And I think that's a real issue as well.
MLS Cup is here December 10th. We're on the heels of an absolutely fantastic Eastern Conference MLS game between Toronto and Montreal. It was one of the great events we've seen here in a long time. I loved every second of it. It was just terrific. And kudos to our Sportsnet 590 The Fans. Dan Riccio had a fantastic call of that game. But what a brilliant game. What a terrific event. Everything's great. There won't be any pizza deals for the MLS Cup on December the 10th. The demand is there. And for whatever reason, they get the younger demographic. It's more of a vibe. They play in the same stadium around the same time of the year. Why is the MLS making inroads with so many young viewers and everything and even corporate people where the CFL is that we even have to have this discussion a week after, by the way, fantastic Grey Cup game. Sorry, fans in Calgary, for what happened to your home team. But what a terrific Grey Cup game. Why do we even have what is MLS doing right that the CFL is doing wrong?
I go back to what I was saying earlier about the Argos. I think it's what TFC is doing right that the Argos are doing wrong. TFC embraces its fan base. TFC reaches out to its supporters group. TFC gives its supporters group its own section in the stands. Like they have built a grassroots fan base in this Toronto and have allowed that fan base to have a voice even in how the team does business. Like, this is soccer the way it is in many places around the world, and they have transplanted that kind of philosophy to Toronto and given the fan base reason to care about the team.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I think for me it's a tough comp because the dynamics are different. When TFC started, they were the sole Canadian team. And if there's one thing that we love, it's feeling part of the greater conversation and competing on a big stage. So I think the comp for them is almost like the Raptors, a sole Canadian team that we can kind of get behind, which is why the colors are red and white, so on and so forth.
Blue Jays, too, for that matter.
Blue Jays are the original great example, right? Them and the Expos.
Yep.
The Argos are one team in a Canadian league. There is no Canadiana about getting around the Argos. Every other franchise in the CFL, for the most part, BC, I'm going to take out of this conversation, they feel like they're a part of the conversation when you know, Saskatchewan is represented, or Edmonton's represented, or Ottawa has a team again is represented. So there is a pride in the fact that your team represents you. No one feels, no football fan in Toronto feels like the Argos represent them, because they're a Bills fan or they're a transplant and they're a Seahawks fan, so on and so forth. The fans who go and support and are there in the rain are spending thousands of dollars to go to watch away games. They feel like they're soccer fans in this country who haven't been heard for decades, and the team represents them. And there is a loyal fan base of soccer fans in this country that's rabid. We have 10 games of soccer on a week in this country. That's more than it's on in the UK or the United States. It's crazy, really, when you look at it. And that's EPL games, not to mention the two or three MLS
other leagues, and where you can get available at broadcast.
So I feel like TFC for the last decade, because they've only been good for the last 2 years, has been an exercise of soccer fans saying, we want to be part of the conversation as Canadians, and that's why the numbers have been so good. And that dynamic doesn't exist the way it does with the Argos. We see it with the Raptors, but we don't see it, you know, in the same way with the Argos and the CFL.
Will be interesting to see what the attendance is at MLS games in Toronto, which has always been pretty good, next year. And if they build on this great MLS Cup experience that we're seeing in Toronto, or they have the same situation the Argos did a few years ago, I suspect they'll benefit greatly, especially from that Eastern Final, which was incredible. Sportsnet Magazine Live. John Gregg, Donovan Bennett, I'm Roger Lajoie for Ben Ennis. Coming up, so the Cleveland Cavaliers won one more game in the regular season than the Raptors last year, and they played a pretty exciting, we can all agree, six-game playoff series, and they're a half game apart now. Why is it that nobody thinks the Raptors are going to beat the Cavs? We'll talk about that next on Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. The top topics. The headiest headlines. The debatiest debate. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Roger Lajoie for Ben Ennis this week. John Gregg and Donovan Bennett with me. We're here for the next hour. Glad you're with us on Sportsnet 590 The Fan here in Toronto on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Later, we'll talk about the return of Tiger Woods and some NFL and MLB chat. But Raptors the focus now, gentlemen, for the next little while. And here's the thing that I still have difficulty, and I know why, because it is LeBron, and we talked about it earlier. But Cleveland won 57 games last year. The Raptors won 56. They met in the Eastern Conference Final. They played six games. Raptors dominated here in Toronto. They lost a series in six games, and Cleveland cleaned them out in the last game. It was a pretty good series. At the moment, Cleveland is 13-5. The Raptors are 13-6. They're separated by a half a game. Yet, the conjecture among not just fans in Toronto is about, but throughout the NBA, and Donovan, correct me if I am wrong, because you're a great basketball guy. People think, well, what's the difference anyway? The Cavs are going to win. Well, those numbers, what, are they fake? Like, why is it? I know LeBron's great. I know he's the difference. But should we not be more celebrating what's going on with this Raptor team?
Well, it's part of its expectations. And, you know, coming into this year, a lot of people said, oh, well, the Raptors will be good, but they'll take a step back. They're not going to win as many games as they did the year before. Boston surpassed them. Chicago is interesting. New York with a new kind of big three around Kristaps Porzingis. But, you know, we're a good portion away through the over a month into the season, and the Raptors are back exactly where they were last year and for many parts of the season before in the same place. And they've done it a bit differently because the makeup of the roster is different, but they're still in the conversation. They're still playing well. I think it's just tough for people to believe because they play relative to the competition that they face. So, you know, you lose two games to the Kings. Last year, you lost two games to the Nuggets. But you play Cleveland close enough to make it interesting and ultimately lose. So they play up to their competition, but also play down to it. And you wonder what the real ceiling of the team is.
Yeah, I think, too, I mean, sports fans in Toronto are just eternal pessimists, right? So, I mean, until you actually climb the mountain, no one's going to believe you can climb the mountain. And specifically when it comes to the NBA, it's such a star-driven league, and a single individual can change the nature of a team so much that, you know, you've got to beat LeBron. And, you know, very few teams have been able to do that consistently over the years. And again, until that happens, you're not going to have anybody really believing that, you know, the Raptors, no matter their record, are the Eastern Conference heavyweights that they maybe that they should be.
Well, 3 years in a row, they've won the Atlantic Division. I already outlined the numbers vis-a-vis Cleveland. But Donovan, it's interesting. You said, you know, people expected them to take a step back. Why? You see, that was another one. Because I did an NBA preview show recently on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and everyone kind of agreed with that. And I said, well, why? They said, well, Boston, like you mentioned, Boston, Chicago, maybe some of the teams would be a little bit better. But why do we expect them to take a step back? Why shouldn't we expect this team now in its fourth year with Lowry in a contract year and the way they've developed? Why can't they win 60 games? Why can't they get even better? Why are we expecting them to take now? Is that just negative pessimism that's in Toronto? But I find it through the NBA that some people still aren't sold that the Raptors are that good.
Yeah, I agree. And you look at the last 5 years, they're you know, top four wins in the league. Dwayne Casey's record has been better every single year. The core of their team is 25 or younger. There's only, you know, three players on the team that's older than 25 years of age. And, you know, it's not sexy, but internal growth in sports, specifically when you have continuity, is a thing. But if you looked at the four or five major franchises in this city, and you said to average fan, which team is the next one to win a championship? You know, over the last 2 years, a lot of them would have said, the Blue Jays. But really, the team that's probably been knocking at the door, in many ways, when you look at their upward trajectory, is the Raptors. But the difference is, people say, well, you don't have a LeBron. Mm-hmm. DeMar is good, but he's flawed.
They went as far as the Jays did last year. They went to the second step before the final.
But it's so funny how among the fan bases that perception is different.
No one would have said
TFC is probably the closest team to winning a championship because they have three of the best 10 players in their league. But it's interesting how the optics, you know, change the way the conversation is.
But it is the NBA, which is a star-driven league where mm-hmm. one or two players can impact the game more than in probably any other sport in the world. So when you don't have a LeBron or a Steph or a superstar of that caliber, even though you do have two all-star caliber players, that's why people don't think the Raptors can get any further than where they've gone, is because they just don't have the horses to get them there.
Okay, here's a real dumb thing, but I like to throw out dumb things. So, all right. DeRozan and Lowry. And let's put the whole Raptor team and put them in New York Knicks jerseys. Do they get more respect because all of a sudden they take a look and they go, because I just wonder here, is it still, it shouldn't be after 20 years in the league, but is it still Toronto-ish to be looking at the Raptors? Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan are elite players in this league. They've been on the Olympic team for the United States. They're multiple-time All-Stars. The team is great. And I get the LeBron thing. But I asked the question, if the Raptors were the Knicks, people were talking about the Knicks and so excited about the Knicks this year, and the Knicks and the Knicks, and I hear the Knicks, and oh, Chicago is coming up, and they're still behind the Raptors. If the Raptor team was playing with the Knicks, would they get more respect because they're in New York?
South of the border they would, yeah. Yes. And for worse, unfortunately, we use a litmus test as to what are people in the South talking about us. Even if, and you can speak to this better than I can, John. But even if we have quotes and articles from like a U.S. reporter or rumors from them, for some reason in the comment sections, those are in some ways more respected than if, you know, a reporter in Canada does. I remember, you know, in the past doing stories, just a compilation of what, you know, analysts from the States thought of our team, and it did really well. So unfortunately, we still look to the South for vindication and validation. And if this team was in the New York marketplace, it would garner more conversation. But I still think that they're not there yet. But the model that you should look at is not necessarily the Warriors or even the Cavs. The model that you should look at is the Spurs. a team with continuity that develops within, that kind of drafts guys and stashes them until they're ready. And then, you know, every once in a while when things go their way, and they have an opportunity to compete for a championship. But no one really gave the Cavs an opportunity to win until they won, right? And so part of that is luck, opportunity, and injuries with the Warriors. So, yeah, could the Raptors make a final if LeBron James is hurt and so on and so forth? Sure, I think you're just buying lottery tickets and hoping to be in the conversation in the East.
So do you think then, you mentioned the Spurs model, are the Raptors doing that?
Yes. Yeah, that's the template for them. That's why they purchased a D-League franchise. That's why they've let guys leave and instead invested in pick capital and drafting picks and paid money for second round picks. That's the model, is to kind of have strength in numbers and build a program rather than hinge off of being able to get, you know, two or three great stars together.
It's still kind of surprising to me, though, and you alluded to the south of the border, and that's a great point, because I even remember listening to Charles Barkley, you know, and he was waxing poetic how much he liked the Raptors. But even Barkley, who I love to listen to, was even saying it, in my mind, kind of a condescending way, oh, yeah, these Raptors, they're really good. Like, what a surprise. Like, oh, the Raptors, they're really good. Well, yeah, thanks, Charles. Of course they're really good. They won 56 games. They were a game back of Cleveland. I just think there's that kind of thing, if it's still Toronto, and you would think after all these years people would get over it. I guess the challenge that Dwayne Casey has now, guys, is to not let that attitude seep into the room. I don't think it would ever would. And how do you keep them interested when, especially now, we talked about the start of last year. How do you keep them interested in the regular season because they're going to be judged by the playoffs? Well, they went to the third round. But now, do you not have the same problem now? How do you keep them interested to be another 55 to 60 win team when you know everyone is expecting you will play Cleveland again in the Eastern Final? You're probably going to lose, but you better get there and we'll see you there. Well, how do you work with that malaise with this team? And I think that's why he's so frustrated, Donovan, with the way the team is playing defense now, because maybe he's thinking they're just having a little fun. They know they're a pretty good team. They can, you know, outscore some teams and play a little soft on the defensive side of the ball. And it doesn't matter. We'll play Cleveland later anyway. And, hey, coach, lay off. We're 13-6. How do you get around that if you're Casey?
As far as keeping the team engaged?
Yeah.
Well, I think it's funny because as much as the central parts are the same, JV, DeMar, Kyle, there are quite a few new pieces. One of them, Sullinger, is yet to play. So there's that. But with the Pirtles and the Siakams and the Powells, and this is just Corey's second year, these are guys who are still trying to find their way and make their mark in the league and are fighting each other for minutes and a pathway to the floor. So I think internally there should be no shortage of motivation, because these are guys who are in many cases on their first contracts and trying to get to the point where they're Kyle and DeMar and they're you know, front facing guys for a franchise. So I don't think that's going to be really an issue.
I think too, when, you know, people tend to forget that it was tooth and nail for them to even get to the conference finals last year.
True.
I think that the core of this team understands the importance of the regular season in terms of securing home court advantage as much as possible and building towards something. And like, that is what keeps you motivated to improve all season long and keeps you from, I don't know, going on cruise control and just kind of fluffing your way through the season. There's momentum that needs to get built so that you don't have to go to seven games again and again come springtime. You want to be able to cruise through and be physically and mentally prepared for the big series, which is hopefully the conference finals.
Well, and I brought up the comparison of the regular season records last year, and that ties in exactly, guys, to, I guess, why Cleveland is Cleveland and why maybe they, quote-unquote, only win 57 games, is they know what the regular season is and they know what it isn't. And they swept through the first two rounds of the playoffs. They had no problems in the first two rounds. And thank goodness for their sake, they did, because they needed that extra energy in that seven games. Everyone looked at the Warriors, and Warriors, remember, had some real tough playoff series last year, despite that 73-9. Cleveland's road was much easier, and who had a little gas left in the tank in game seven, being down 3-1, was the Cavs. Do the Raptors play their star players too much, and is that why it takes seven games in the first round of the series? And maybe that's a difference maker even with the Cavs. Maybe the regular season shouldn't. Now we're running counter. Yes, it's really important they get the number one seed so they get home court. But how important is the regular season if your star guys are going to run out of gas anyway?
Yeah, I mean, the one concern I have is that your two best players are, you know, top 10 in the league in minutes. And in the first round, it was, you know, tooth and nail because DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry, frankly, didn't play well. And they both were hurt. Now, DeMar DeRozan's injury was a thumb injury. I don't know if that was necessary because of minutes, but any extra minute that you're on the court is exposing you to undue risk. And a frustration for me, as much as I love the job that Dwayne Casey has done and I feel like he's undervalued, is the Raptors have had 20-point victories twice in the span of a week. And Kyle Lowry has been playing with 6 minutes left in the game both times. Like, to me, that is inexcusable and really unnecessary.
Yeah, why is he doing it, do you think, though? Like, why then? Like, why is it? Like, does Lowry want to play? Hey, Lowry's looking for a contract. He helping a brother out kind of thing?
Well,
like, what is that?
I don't think so. I think when you look at the plus minus of Lowry on and off the floor, I think that's part of the issue. But if you can't withstand a 20-point lead in a 7 to 6 minute span, I think then you have a bigger problem.
Yeah, I mean, if Corey Joseph can't come in and lock things down for you at the end of a game, then you got, like you said,
you got problems.
Big problems with depth. And if we look back, if we take it back to the Spurs model, you're supposed to have the kind of depth that allows you to not have to play guys, really, to sit them for entire games, which is what Greg Popovich does when his guys, he feels they played too many minutes. And, you know, with Kyle Lowry averaging the most minutes in the league, it's not a recipe for long-term success. And I agree with you, Donovan. It's disconcerting.
Yeah, Steph Curry doesn't play the fourth quarter most of the time. Neither does LeBron. You mentioned Pop, the way he gives guys days off. He doesn't care if anyone's complaining about it, whatever. And the Raptors are the opposite, and it's a grind. You get to the season. So it's a dichotomy, guys. It's important. Yeah, you want to get home court next time you play the Cavs. That series would be very different if the Raptors had home court advantage. But to get home court advantage, at least in the mind of the Raptors, then you got to play the you-know-what out of DeRozan and Lowry to make up that difference so you win as many games as you can, I guess.
I might be conflating two totally separate things, but I just wonder at times, because to me it makes no sense. I wonder, look at Kyle Lowry, he's in the last year of his contract. You're looking at extending a player who at the point guard position is going to be in his, you know, mid to late 30s by the end of the deal, and there's only been two point guards to ever play at a high level at that age. Steve Nash and John Stockton, and he doesn't profile to play stylistically like either of them. And you've obviously got Corey Joseph and you have DeLon Wright. I just wonder if they're playing him big minutes, knowing that, well, he's not going to be around with us on the backside of it. And it, almost in a way, yeah, we can give Larry Johnson 400 carries because we're not going to re-sign him anyways.
But then you're cutting off your nose to spite your face because
yes.
You want to win.
Yes.
Most importantly, I mean, when Kyle Lowry walks, and I'm assuming he will, you don't really have anybody to replace his production. So
yeah.
You're not as good a team next season as you are this season. You can't, you know, expend all of his energy in the regular season mopping up 20-point wins.
But why do we assume he walks?
Well,
why is that assumption? Like, I mean,
I just assume a bottom feeding team that has a lot more money to spend will wow him with some dollars.
Philadelphia.
There you go.
You think so, eh?
No, well, the Raptors, if they want him, he'll be a Raptor. They can offer him more money and more years. So
right.
It's really the choice is there.
Well, then why wouldn't they want him?
Because why don't the Blue Jays want Edwin Encarnacion?
Oh, no. Semantics of the management.
It'd be the same
conversation. You can be you think you can be better without him. I get that.
You think you can't, you shouldn't pay him long-term dollars because he's
age.
Old he is.
Right. Yeah. It's not necessarily fiscally responsible. So a great example would be the Grizzlies and Mike Conley. They re-signed Mike Conley because they didn't really have a better option and they could give him the most money. Mike Conley, for about a week, was the highest paid player in the history of the NBA. He's never made an All-Star game. So does it make sense to resign him? Yes, because he's your second best player and you don't have another option. But does it make sense to make him the highest player in the history of the league? No.
Okay. I'd like to see what their option will be, though. That'd be interesting.
It's the same reason they let Bismack walk, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to give that guy $17 million, but somebody will.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Roger Lajoie, John Grigg, Donovan Bennett with you on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Great you're with us. We'll talk about Tiger Woods' return and an impressive day two return, which is great for fans of Tiger and I'm sure all of golf. We talked about the roster then. So DeRozan and Lowry are playing too much. We can agree with that. All right. But it's another element. But let's talk about some of the veteran players and where they fit in. Terrence Ross has been one of the guys when I do the rap postgame shows on the Sportsnet 590 The Fan in Toronto is just one of the, like, the great dichotomy is like Terrence Ross will always get some kind of reaction because when he's bad, he's bad. And when he's good, he's good. And he's been pretty good lately. How do we, have we changed our opinion on what Terrence Ross brings to the mix with this team? Or is it always going to be the same discussion, Don?
You know what? For me, it's still the same discussion because Terrence Ross is, you know, that guy that you're really infatuated with. You know, but he cheats on you and he says he's going to be different. But, you know, how much can you trust him? And so he's profiled as a guy who's had hot stretches, great games, great weeks and even great months. But then there's been times where you don't hear from him and he's wildly inconsistent on both ends of the floor. I mean, we're talking about a guy who's scored 50 plus points in a game and also had in the same year had multiple games where he scored 0 points. Multiple games where he didn't play at all. So he has been that enigma, and he's been the equivalent for Raptors fans, what, you know, not necessarily this year, but in the past, what Kadri has been for Leafs fans. He's always a conversation. Everyone has an opinion about him. I'd like to think that with a little bit of maturity, you know, he's turned the corner and he can be consistent, but there's just been too many times when you thought he took that next step, and then all of a sudden he took two steps back.
Yeah, I think he's been maddeningly inconsistent for this team. And you know, as you say, Don, I mean, I just flash such incredible skills at times that it's just amazing. But, you know, he's the fifth highest paid player on the team right now. And while the contract actually looks pretty good when you look NBA-wide, you have to expect more as a fan base from a guy who's paid that handsomely. And as you say, he's in and out game by game. He's done pretty well this year to raise his inconsistency or to raise his consistency, but it's still just not quite enough.
He was a lottery pick. Athletically, he's the most athletic guy on the team, more athletic at this point of his career than DeMar DeRozan. From a mechanic standpoint, he has the best looking shot on the team. So although he's playing at a much higher level, you're also getting excited for something that he should be doing. Like, we're excited because for so long he wasn't close to his potential. Now he's showing flashes of it. So,
but if he does continue to show flash of it, is it another reason to expect, all right, so maybe this team can take the next step in the development, get to that 55-60 win mark and move up, get better? I know it's harder to improve. One of the toughest things in sports, just because of pure math, guys, is to have 5, 6, 7, 8 years of continuing improvement because eventually, well, then you have to go 82-0, and that's right. Not going to happen. But the Raptors are in a position now. Can they take the next level to get up 60? And if we see more of Ross, as we've seen in the first 23 games, as we've seen for the most of his career, is that enough? Is that a difference maker?
Well, I think stylistically in the makeup of the team, I think a lot of people put their hopes on Jonas Valanciunas as the guy who can really improve to take them to the next level. I think actually it's probably Ross because the way they play with so much pick and roll and Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan being so ball dominant, JV is not going to get the opportunities to really make such a big impact offensively. His usage rate is never going to be that high. But Terrence Ross, he's a catch and shoot player. He can get out on the break. He's a guy who can defend and bother the other wing scorers, which helps because DeMar DeRozan isn't going to be the guy who you want guarding LeBron James for long stretches. So with the makeup of the team, I think Ross's improvement actually brings them to a higher level than really the steady but slow improvement of Jonas Valanciunas. So I do think if Ross is in the conversation of a guy who's averaging 16, 17 points a night, a steal or two, 5 or 6 rebounds, then yeah, you're looking at an entirely different team. And then he becomes a younger version of Andre Iguodala for the Warriors, where he's not a starter, but he's a guy who closes games and everyone's afraid of.
But don't we need to see more from JV on a nightly basis for this team to really take the next step? I mean, when he was dominating in the playoffs last year before he got injured, everybody was excited about the way this team could play playoff basketball because of his presence in the middle.
Especially with DeRozan and Lowry struggling in the first two rounds of the playoffs at times. He was the MVP in a lot of nights.
And now maybe that play was as much a result of the struggles of the people around him and his teammates and how they had no choice but to go to him more. But it just seems to me that if you're going to match up against other big teams in the conference and around the league, you got to have JV dominating the paint like we know he can.
Yeah, I think the thing is that styles make fights. And what was opportune for JV is in the Pacers, who played half-court basketball and had bigs, and in Miami, who one of their best players is Hassan Whiteside, he had someone to fight, right? And so he's a bit of a dinosaur in basketball where a lot of teams aren't playing centers for big minutes or just starting the games, but they're not ending them. So, yeah, if you're playing another team with the traditional back to the basket center, I think JV can play and thrive because there's someone for him to use his skills against. But if they're playing the Bulls in the first or second round and they're closing games with Bobby Portis and Mirotić playing center, who are actually there to shoot 18-footers in the case of Mirotić, three-pointers, then JV's not going to have an impact because he's not going to play.
Mm-hmm.
And Dwayne Casey has shown that as much as some people would like him to say, well, you know, fight that with playing JV and forcing them to guard JV on the other end, he's not willing to do it because their offense runs around Kyle and DeMar, not JV.
Matchups are so important, and that's one of the reasons maybe this team, we talk about playing up or down to the level of competition. Matchups in the NBA are crucial, and there may be some teams that they'll have a tougher time against than others, regardless of the records. Last regular season, start of regular season, all the talk was, and rightfully so, Damari Carroll is the perfect fit. There's a guy to bring in. This is a guy, the missing piece. Well, last year was basically a write-off. He was hurt so much and whatever. But he's healthy now. Is he bringing what the Raptors really anticipated he was going to bring to this team when they signed him 2 years ago?
No, but I think you change expectations as the situations change. And, you know, the one guy who is on the Spurs resting plan on this team is Damari Carroll. He doesn't play back-to-backs. Normally it's the second game of a back-to-back, but he skipped the first night of the back-to-back last night because the second game is a tougher one, that being Atlanta relative to playing L.A. So Norman Powell gets the start in his stead. So he is a guy who's on that maintenance program where don't care what you do in the regular season. Don't care really what you look like. By the time we're in April, May, and June, one, are you healthy and are you in rhythm? And he only played 26 games, and certainly they missed him in, as far as his floor spacing and his defense. But the thing that wasn't spoken about was he missed an opportunity to assimilate with his teammates. He was a guy who had no relationship with Kyle or DeMar previous to playing here. So it was different in when JV missed a lot of time last year or DeMar missed a lot of time the year before. Those guys have played in this system and with these guys for their entire careers. They have a relationship with the coach. That wasn't the case for Damari Carroll. Everything was new. So funny enough, in the playoffs, he was still learning where his spot should be on the floor. So I really think this year is about getting him up to speed and comfortable and keeping him healthy.
Yeah, and I think there's still some debate about whether he is healthy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, if he is 100% healthy, then he is not the player that everybody expected him to be even post-surgery, right? So I have to believe that he's not quite there, and that's all part of the maintenance schedule that you're talking about, Donovan. If he was healthy, he'd be playing more, and he's not.
Yeah, in the last 2 weeks, he's looked much better. He's had more bounce in his step. But I think it may not be a debate at this point, and there might be a reason why Atlanta wasn't willing to go as high financially as the Raptors, because they had the institutional knowledge, and they thought, well, maybe he's a bit of a lemon. And, you know, a guy who in two off seasons had back-to-back knee surgeries, and he's an aging player and a very physical player at that. Maybe there is a reason why he ended up a Toronto Raptor.
He's just not the 3-and-D guy that everybody thought he could be, right? I mean,
yeah. And speaking of Atlanta, they are here tonight to take on the Raptors, who are 13-6 on a 5-game winning streak, have the best point differential in the Eastern Conference, third best point differential in the entire NBA. As Charles Barkley said, they're good. They're good. They're good. I still don't think they're getting enough respect. Roger Lejoie for Ben Ennis, John Gregg, Donovan Bennett here. Coming up, Tiger Woods, a pretty good second round. In 2008, when he won his 14th major, all the eyes of the golf world were on Tiger. Tiger this, Tiger that. Tiger ran into problems, and those eyes went somewhere else because they're sure not watching golf. How important to golf is a potential comeback from Tiger Woods? We'll talk about that next on Sportsnet Magazine Live, on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Fans know that Sportsnet.ca has them covered with news, analysis, highlights, and storytelling. But the lineup also includes podcasts. Here's a taste of Free Association, a Raptors and NBA podcast. Now, please welcome your hosts, J.D. Bunkus and Donovan Bennett.
Very pleased to be joined on the program by longtime NBA vet, Comcast Sportsnet's Sacramento Kings analyst and radio host on CBS Radio KHTK 1140 with Grant Napier, Doug Christie.
When have you guys ever known a player to set a culture?
LeBron James? I mean, I think he'd be the only guy I could think of.
I'm saying.
Jason Kidd, maybe? We talk about 3&Ds, and Damari Carroll got big money. Nicholas Batum got big money. Andre Iguodala, a guy who does a lot of things that you did, was the MVP of the finals. If Doug Christie is playing right now, we know he'd be more appreciated, but do you think to yourself what type of money you'd be making?
I mean, it would equate. I'd probably be making $100 million. That would be. But, you know, you can't really think about that because then, you know, I think of a guy like Magic Johnson or Iceman George Gervin. I mean, they're probably sitting back going, oh, my God. You know, it's part of it because being on sports radio, we have those conversations and people call in and talk about it. I just think that the value and the things that not only like the older guys built up and then we kind of tried to build upon that, it's all part of what the commissioner has done and everybody has done, and now it's paying off because of the social media and the popularity and the worldwide popularity of the game of basketball. But hey, if you need a 10-day.
Go to sportsnet.ca and click on the Podcast Central logo for the scoop on Free Association and all our shows, as well as links to listen and subscribe. As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
For Ben Ennis this week, John Grigg and Donovan Bennett alongside me. Tiger Woods is not alongside the leaders yet at the Hero World Challenge, but he's certainly the story of that tournament. And that, boy, that in itself is just like the good old days for golf. A second round 65, third best round of round two after Tiger was 17th out of 18 golfers. So there's some progression. He's looked pretty good. How important, it seems like stating the obvious, but how important to the world of golf, John, is Tiger Woods if he can even come back to being relevant again in some capacity?
Yeah, I think it would be huge. I mean, he, despite not playing for the better part of 3 years now, I mean, he is still the biggest name in golf. I mean, even around our offices where it's our job to watch sports, we would never turn on the Hero World Challenge and have any interest in it. Except for the fact that Tiger Woods is shooting 65 or whatever it was on Friday afternoon. I mean, he is the biggest, he's the best golfer of all time, hands down. Somebody could debate me on that if they want, but in my mind, it's true. He changed the nature of golf. He is the reason that golf, the fields in golf are so deep now, and that it is as much of a global game as it is. And any kind of Tiger Woods just not being bad is good for golf.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Tiger, you know, his gift is also his curse in that he brought the game to such a level that, you know, whether it's, you know, the strength training or, you know, the analysis of video, and the term wasn't around, but using kind of metrics and analytics to get better, that the younger generation who was so infatuated with him did all the same things and now are, you know, routinely beating him. And I feel like that we wouldn't have the Rorys and the Spieths now if it wasn't for Tiger taking things to such a high level.
Yeah, there's no way. I mean, Tiger Woods made golf cool.
Yeah.
And for an entire generation of golfers, they grew up wanting to be like Tiger. And, you know, you could argue that maybe Arnie Palmer did that in the 50s and 60s and maybe Jack did it in the 60s and 70s, but nothing like, I mean, Tiger was a global phenomenon like Michael Jordan was. And the game of golf is better because Tiger Woods has been around it and dominated it for the better part of 15 years.
Well, there's no question about that. I'll save the debate. I don't even like the GOAT arguments, greatest of all time arguments, because they're really not solvable. But during the time of his prime, and we talked about this off air, 14 major tournaments by the time he was 32 years old is ridiculous. And from what you guys are talking about, the socioeconomic of what he did for the golf industry and for opening the sport. My goodness, he won the Masters by 12 shots a decade, and was only 15 years prior where black people couldn't even play on the course. My God, it was phenomenal. Agreed, agreed, agreed. The only thing I'll say is, you know, when we talk about the relevance of him here in golf now, I wonder, because when we're naming that, Bobby Orr is the only one that comes to my mind, of a guy who was so great, yet the time of being so great was so short. Now, Orr had to retire. But try to imagine a sport where it's like, imagine Michael Jordan won all his six NBA titles in his first 7 years and then retired or got hurt or then became a lousy player again. That's the thing with Tiger. We're still, and I know it's a long period of time. What was the first one? 97, something like that. So, you know, it wasn't just 2 or 3 years. But then to become, what has he done since 2008? Not very much. You know what I mean? That's where it's hard to quantify where he is. But back to the point, you're right. Would the Hero World Challenge be a topic in this show without Tiger? No. And I'd ask anybody without Googling it, who's leading the tournament? Nobody knows and nobody cares. They just know Tiger Woods is playing pretty well, Donovan.
Well, they've had record ratings, the Golf Channel has, for the Hero World Challenge. And, I mean, it's tough to compare that because who else is watching golf, you know, in December previous to now? But the thing, it's funny because I feel like golf, even without Tiger, is in a great spot because of Tiger, because there are so many young fans. We talked about the challenges that the CFL has. Golf historically has been an old man's game, an old man, rich country club business game. That's not really the case anymore. You go to clubs all over this country and there's lots of young people, many who are too young to even see Tiger in his prime, playing the game. And some of that is because of the success of his video game. But as you said, John, he's made it cool and brands like Under Armour and Nike embracing it, embracing the fashion. So I think he's had an effect where there's a nice base level of young, interested golf fans that are going to carry the sport for a long time, no matter what Tiger does. However, there's still a large group of the population who aren't golf fans. They're Tiger Woods fans. And they tune in just to see him and how he's scoring. And if he's playing in a tournament, they care. And if he's not, they don't. My grandfather is one of them. He's not a golf fan. He's a Tiger Woods fan. He's asking me, what did Tiger shoot? He didn't ask who's the leader and how many back is, you know, Mickelson and so on and so forth. He only wants me to tell him if I got a push alert that Tiger shot whatever. And so I think for that fan base now to be, again, part of the golf conversation, because, you know, forever they weren't. They were really part of the conversation on what's the status of his back this week.
Yeah, and I think it's also important to remember that it was just a few years ago when he came back for the first time, you know, where he won five tournaments in 2013. He was the number two money earner on the PGA Tour. There was a lot of...
He got up to the number one player in the world at one point again.
He won three tournaments the year before during that comeback, and everybody was excited. Whether you were a Tiger lover or a Tiger hater, whether you were a player on the course who had to go up against him, whether you were a fan who wanted to watch or go, everybody was excited. It's just... golf is better, and sports in general are better when Tiger Woods is playing a good golf.
I will say, I was watching, and I felt like it wasn't Tiger Woods. Like, it wasn't the Tiger Woods that we knew and love. And when you saw that red, it was feared. I mean, he takes off his cap to kind of wave to fans. He's balding.
Yeah. You know, he's getting older, pal. He's 41. What do you want?
He physically is the fist pump is not as vigorous.
What do you want?
He's just gingerly picking the ball up. Like, I felt like I'm watching Muhammad Ali late in his career, not in his prime.
But yeah, exactly. You are.
You're watching Michael Jordan
play for Washington.
Yeah, but you still tune in to see what Michael could do even when he was playing for the Wizards, right?
He's not really that old in golf years.
Well, he is, because he's been out there since he was like 22.
He's no longer 25. Deal with it, okay? He's no longer 25.
A single tear went down my eye when I saw him.
Right, like he's closing in on 20 years, and he's had a lot of problems physically, And, you know, most of the guys, when they hit their 40s, they cannot perform the way they have in the past. Like, Phil Mickelson is an exception to that rule.
Vijay Singh, maybe.
Vijay Singh a little bit. There have been a couple of guys over the years, for sure. And of course, Jack Nicklaus was 46 when he won his final major. But in general, this is a, like sports is trending around the world, golf is a young man's game.
65 in the second round, 7 under. The co-leaders are, you don't care. Check it out. You're only interested in Tiger. I agree with your granddad on that one. I could care who's winning that tournament. Got a couple of minutes to talk about the NFL. Cowboys are the trending team with good reason. They're 11-1. There's a lot to like. But are they really that? Are they that good? Are they the team to beat? I know 11-1 is 11-1. I still, and I watch that Vikings game, and I'm going, they could have just as easily been 10-2. How good are the Dallas Cowboys?
They're not that good, and this is coming from a lifelong Cowboys fan. But I think their strength is they're not that bad. We talk about parity in the NHL, and you know some people feel like with expansion, the league is going to be even more watered down. I feel like the NFL product is across the board, you know, as bad as it's been in the last 20 years. Like the great teams of yesteryear, I mean, given the individual athletes are better, but we're talking about execution, we're talking about penalties. There's a lot of bad football teams. And so I feel like Dallas has been pretty good at not being bad, not beating themselves. And, you know, I've been terrible at picking games on this station, on Walker's show, doing NFL picks. And I look at a lot of spreads and I look at both teams and I'm like, I don't like either of these teams. Like the Miami Dolphins aren't good, but they've won a bunch of games in the row because they're not that bad. And even the Patriots, arguably, you know, their first or second best player, Rob Gronkowski, is not going to play for the rest of the year. They're still probably the best team in the AFC because there's so many bad football teams.
Well, don't feel bad about the bad predictions because I had a gambling analyst on with me 10 years ago, and I'll never forget what he told me. I said, how do you know when the line's good? You know, there's so many factors. How do you know when the line's good? He said, it's a great question. Nobody ever asked me that. And I said, would you answer it? How do you know when the line's good? He said, when I wouldn't bet on either team. That's what they do. They are masters at that. That's part and parcel of what they do. Are the Cowboys that good?
I would say that they are, you know, the best of the bunch in their conference right now. I mean, I don't know how you could argue that they aren't. I mean, for me, it's still, you got to beat the Patriots in the big game to be considered the best. But I agree with you, Donovan, in that the overall level of play in the NFL just seems to be not as good as it used to be. And I really think that's part of the economics of the league and it being more of a young man's league now. You don't have those kind of grizzled vets who know all the little tricks to take care of the ball or know how to get around a guy or keep a guy from getting to their quarterback. You've got, you know, second, third year players who are playing very important positions and playing a lot. And they're just sloppier because they're younger. It's just the nature of the economics of that league right now, that the veterans are being pushed out. There's no savvy anymore.
Okay, we got about a minute. Are the Patriots without Gronk, do they even have a shot? He's posting now that he'll be back on the dance floor soon, but is their defense good enough to compete and win a championship, especially against when you get to playoff games against teams like Seattle, Denver? That's tripped them up before.
Yeah, I mean, they won't face Seattle until the Super Bowl, and there's a couple guarantees in life, you know, death taxes and Belichick. And he'll find a way to scheme them up. And in the AFC, who if not them?
Yeah, who else?
Chiefs. The Raiders maybe, but they've run through their division without any issue once again. And I just don't see another elite team in the conference pushing them.
Yeah, I mean I agree. I think the Patriots are the best team in the conference until they're not. And nobody has shown me that they are better, at Gronk or no Gronk.
And there's Tom Brady factor, and you're right about Belichick. Boys, great to be with you here this week, Sportsnet Magazine Live. Always a pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Good times, Roger.
That's John, Greg, Donovan, Bennett. I'm Roger Lajoie for Ben Ennis. Ben back in the chair next week. Stick around. More to come on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network.